Blog Talk Radio.
Top of the morning to you, folks. I hope you're having a phenomenal Wednesday. What do they call it? Hump Day. I tell you what, it is. My morning started off great. Had a great conversation with an old friend who was in town. So that was. It's always invigorating. He causes you to think, causes you to process. He's very intellectual. So it was fun talking to him. He is a no-holds-barred type of guy. So that is a good way. You know, sitting at Harbor Docks, drinking coffee, talking with a friend, analyzing life, you know, looking at the future, discussing the past, you know, that's the key. You know, you build on that. And today we're in Chapter 17 of Howard Schultz's book, Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul. We've had a lot of comments coming in on this because people are able to realize how this book can help them, not just in their corporate business, but in their personal business. And I think that's the key. That's what we really want to get across. Sometimes it's just the analyzing of a book from someone else that you start to dig deep. You start to realize where it's at and what it's doing. And I believe at the end of the day, that is the key more than anything else. Howard starts Chapter 17 off. Well, first of all, he's titled it Whirlwind. And you know, when you're building a business of any kind, just in life in general, is it not chaotic? Is it not a whirlwind? You're sitting here jamming things out. You're trying to make it all click. You're trying to keep it, some people say compartmentalized. I can't do that. I just go and blow and build life as it goes. But it can get chaotic. Listen to this. Starbucks was entering a tumultuous, I can't say that word, you know, chaotic period. In the first half of 2008, as we pushed new products and programs into the marketplace, we were making many decisions, now here's the kicker, with little or imperfect information, in a large part trusting instinct. Visionaries, business builders, are not the most analytical. They see it, they understand it, they go in with a gut instinct, and they're rolling it forward. Here's what else he writes. There was a lot the company could try to control, but so much like the economy, competition, and our critics, that we could not. Folks, this chapter, in the middle of a whirlwind, here's what you're going to find. You're going to have critics. You're going to have people that come in and call you a name, tell you you're stupid, tell you don't know what you're doing. Try to use mind games to tell you that you have your own agenda. You got to hold true to where you're going. This is what's so neat about this book. Every chapter is a little bit different of an insight of what Howard Schultz and his team did to create this company, to bring it back out without losing its soul. And I think it is a great parallel to the network marketing, the direct selling industry. Listen to this. Everyone was so very anxious to see the needle move. But behind closed doors, our people were worried whether we had gotten carried away about just how quickly we might be able to make a real difference for our customers and to the business. When great things are happening, we all get carried away. We all get excited. We all want to see it happen overnight. We want to see it just explode. It's kind of like weight loss, the way I see it. You didn't gain those extra pounds overnight. You're not going to lose them overnight. In your business, Starbucks business, my business, we didn't get here overnight. We're not going to get out of it overnight. It takes a little bit of work, a little bit of drive, a little bit of focus. And if we're willing to do that, the sky can be the limit. Howard writes, rarely did I sleep more than 4 hours a night as I tried to predict what onslaught of opportunities, successes, dilemmas the next day might bring. Now, that's not healthy. We all know you got to have 6 to 8 hours of sleep. But listen to what this was so engrossed in his mind, so much in his blood, that he was pumping it out. He was doing his best to stay focused, and he did a phenomenal job. He goes on to say, you know what, we've got something going on. He'd flown some people to Italy. They have this new drink that they think may be the next big thing. His lieutenant says, Howard, you should get over here He insisted after tasting the drink himself, we may have found the next Frappuccino. Now, in the midst of the whirlwind, in the midst of doing everything, Howard still has his scouts out there. They're looking for something that will be the next value-added product that will change the customer's experience. He's always staying. This is what I think helped create the Starbucks as we know today, is that he was always looking for what would be that next aha moment for the customer. See, this is the kicker. This is what we have to do in business. We have to look for that next aha moment. As a business owner, you cannot just sit back on your laurels and say, we got a great product, look what it's doing for us, we're all making money, our family's happy. You can't do that. As a distributor, you can't say, oh, look at my sponsor, oh, they're going to make me successful. No, you have to be looking at what makes you unique. How can you change and help people around you, friends, family, I don't care, cold people, brand new people you meet, it doesn't matter. How can you help change their life? How can you give them an experience with the product or service that you're marketing that's going to change them? See, that's where we've got to look deep, folks. Too many times we get wrapped up, as we've read in this book, on the numbers. We can't do that. But when we left this last chapter, they were just coming out of the shareholder meeting. He writes, this is about April 2008, and after the glow of the annual meeting, the partners in our home office had gotten back to work. But now listen, this is going to be critical. Today we're talking about the whirlwind, the chaos that goes on inside and outside the offices, inside and outside your team. Listen to this here. Public reaction to the six initiatives we had announced at the annual meeting was mixed, and to my annoyance, but less and less to my surprise, a vein of cynicism ran through much of the coverage in the traditional media and online. When we're all at a point where there's craziness going on, it's interesting how we try to focus on other people's hurts, other people's worries. Sometimes our inner insecurities will come out. Listen to this right here. Investment bloggers were particularly harsh, yet not completely off base. They were writing things like, it hardly seems that a new coffee blend and an automated beverage machine will be the cure of all of Starbucks' economic woes, wrote Sarah Gilbert of BloggingStock.com. Calling us desperate. Rather than in return to what they do best, wrote Todd Sullivan on SpeakingAlpha.com, Starbucks seems intent on running around in more directions. The Wall Street Journal quoted an investor who estimated her own share values had lost $80,000. I should have sold. They have to stop taking themselves seriously. Let's face it, it's still coffee, not brain surgery, a corporate consultant told USA Today. It's always easy for outside critics. Lord, I see it myself. We've done critical reports that, looking back on them, it's like, man, we should have taken a different road on that. If you've noticed in the last, I don't know, 9 months, we've taken a little bit of a backseat, giving people more room, raising red flags, but not trying to exacerbate certain situations on our own blogs. See, at the end of the day, it's about the people. It's about that connection. And if all of us that are out here trying to build businesses, but yet at the same time are critical of other people, how in the heck are we going to do that? Here's what Howard writes, and this is what I want to drive in on and talk about for a second. Applying such improvements to our business may not have been brain surgery, but outsiders failed to appreciate the nuances of invigorating a service-based business. Now listen, right here's the important part. Especially a brand as emotionally charged as ours. Starbucks is not a coffee company that serves people. It's a people company that serves coffee, and human behavior is much more challenging to change than any muffin recipe or marketing strategy. Are we not in the people business? think about this for a second. Is that not the key to what we're doing? See, this is the key. This is where we're headed. This is what we're wanting to make happen. We are moving this to a whole new level. If all of a sudden we realize it's not the comp plan, it's not the product, it's the people. This is why some of my training I explain to people, if you cannot fall in love with the leader of your company and the mission that they have, long term it will not work. Professional salespeople enter into our arena all day long and they say, Troy, you're wrong on that. You don't need to be passionate about the product. You don't need to be passionate about the company. You don't need to like the leader. All you got to do is go out there and sell, sell, sell. They're not wrong. Not wrong at all. One of my dear friends, I call her my sister, Donna Valdez, shared yesterday on Facebook that her first product caused people to have gas and diarrhea. She was selling fiber. She goes, how can I get passionate about that? I agreed with her. It would make for interesting long-term tasting parties or hotel meetings. You know, you would just want to get in there and quick and let them sample the product and tell them to hurry home before they embarrass themselves. But I analyzed what she wrote, and I thought, you know what, though? I bet she did get passionate when she saw people's health changing. I bet she did get passionate when she saw people on her team who started to share their story, and yeah, they had to go through those embarrassing moments, bless their hearts, but I bet at the end of the day it started to get exciting to her because she was hearing stories of success. Now, I understand where she's coming from, and I love her to death, and she's got a great point. See, I understand that people not all the time will agree with where I'm coming from, but I believe that we can come to common ground, and I believe that Starbucks is a prime example of during the chaos, during all of the confusion, during the economy going to hell in a handbasket, Howard realized a very important factor that most critics and most shareholders did not. Starbucks is not a coffee company that serves people. It is a people company that serves coffee. We in direct selling, we in network marketing, to get back to the basics. See, that's the key. Howard writes this too. He says, many of the decisions I was making confounded others because they did not quite grasp the intangible value of preserving the company's culture. See, something that companies that enter and leave network marketing don't understand, I shouldn't even say network marketing, direct sales as a whole, is it's about the culture. Jim Gilhouse, my partner, states, network marketing is self-development with a compensation plan. Now, his is a lot longer than that. That's just my little one. And I believe that's an accurate statement. I can show you people who will tell you, you know, network marketing as a business channel didn't really change my life financially. It changed my life internally. There's a story Art Williams shares in his book, Coach, about a man that never made a dime at Primerica, but because of the training he received, it allowed him to grow in his own business to become like head of security at a big major sports complex. That's intangible value that numbers do not share. I'm in a critical report right now over on Facebook with a very logical and very intelligent individual when it comes to the numbers, but does not understand the intangible of the emotional connection. See, this is the concept that we have to look at. It's not about Howard's individual initiatives. It's about what those initiatives could or could not cause from that emotional connection of serving people. One of those that did take off real quick was Pike's Place Roast. And for one of the few times in Starbucks history, they'd scrounged together all of their marketing resource money and they pushed it into one big thing. They were going to New York, and simultaneously across the United States in 7,100 stores, they would launch the largest tasting party in history. I hope I hope Guinness World Book of Records was there. All around us, Howard writes, smiling baristas pushed coffee carts and offered passerbyers steaming samples of coffee on this cold day. I love that. I think that's great. You know, this is the kicker. This is what's so beautiful. Here they are having fun. Listen, the baristas were pushing carts of coffee. They were having fun. At the same time, the baristas in the stores, and Starbucks had done some stuff. They had the partners wearing black T-shirts. Imprinted in the front was bold, fresh, and smooth, which was the tagline for Pike's Place. It was the loudest marketing event Starbucks had ever executed. This was the fun. Listen to this. Because I believe that each one of us, if we put our minds together, we can have our own tasting parties. We can have our own catalytic moment in our business, not just at a corporate level. He says, pulling off something so grand, so fast, required logistical and creative heroics, and a lot of anxiety had preceded this day. I had pushed our people to the brink, and they had delivered, meeting once unthinkable deadlines and acting as if we were one store with one goal. See, Howard understands that each store is its own individual culture, but yet as a whole, because they're all with the same mission, they're all with the transformational agenda. The sky was the limit on where they could go or what they could do. They were moving it to a new level. They were moving it forward, taking it one step at a time. They were rising this where it needed to go. See, that's what we've got to do in our life, in our business, with those we come in contact with. We've got to act as one store with one goal. Now, I know that inside of companies, and this is a debatable issue, and I get this in direct selling all the time, some people believe that top team leaders should control all of their own marketing. My mentor and good friend, Garrett McGrath, does this himself. He has Team in Spirit. He's done a phenomenal job at creating that identity and rallying his troops and creating that culture. Someone that I've criticized but yet have deep respect for, Robert Dean, has created the Top Gun team. They create their own identity, they own their own thing. Brighart, Orne Woodward, the list could go on. And there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes when you get all this stuff together, all of a sudden you have different teams doing different things. And that's awesome as long as each team acts as one store with one focus. See, that's got to be the key here. We cannot be all out there in our companies trying to compete with each other to the demise of the people we're serving. We have to keep it cranking forward. I see this happen a lot with companies that launch. And right now I'm loosely watching and consulting with some companies that are launching in the coffee niche inside of direct selling. And it's so fun. I believe this niche has been underserved. I believe that it's going to explode. But sometimes there's these little inner turmoils that happen where people are playing around and they get competitive and they get all frustrated, and they don't. They need to act as one store with one goal. See, that's the awesomeness about what we're talking about here. This is how it works. The Pike's Place roast was a success. It was invigorating to see the work pay off. It was exciting to see this grow. And as Howard and his team left New York that day for the five-hour trip back to California, or not California, but Seattle, here's what they came across. This was beautiful. On a five-hour trip back, we took time to consider why Pike Place Roast seemed to be working so well so that we could apply what we'd learned to future projects. We eventually concluded that the product, as well as the way we had brought it to market, met three critical criteria for the success of Starbucks. You need to write these down. And you need to probably reformulate them for yourself, but listen to this. Number one, it was right for and engaged our partners. I'll use BK Breako real quick because he's, of all the companies that I love just hanging out with and looking at, they brought out Vima PM last fall. And it truly met number one. It was right because it engaged their partners. Their partners got excited about it. It was awesome to watch. The second thing is it was right for and met the needs of our customers when BK brought out Vima PM. One of the research that they had done was to realize that just like Howard here was only sleeping 4 hours a night, people had sleep deprivation and they needed something that was all natural. And he knew that if he could put some Vima in there, that the Vima formula, along with some of the herbs that they did, that would help you. And it did. I beta tested this thing. I tried it. Number three, it's right for the business. Notice this. This is important. The three criteria is the partners, the customers, and then the business. See, what is it that you're bringing to market? What is it you already have that you need to look at and say, okay, this will be right for the partners, for the customers, for the business? See, that's the awesome key to it. Richard Brook, my other mentor and dear friend that founded 2110, brought out Life Shots. That product did the same exact thing. It was right for the partners, right for the customers, right for the business. This is what we must look for. However, listen to this little caveat that he puts in here. Unfortunately, I did not realize that not everything the company was trying to do that season met these three very important standards. Howard and the team decided to make these a standard in which they would do everything with. And see, he was coming off that shareholders meeting for the first quarter. Now he's going into April 28th, and they're getting the second quarter earning numbers, and they suck. Worst in the history of the business. It was tough. He writes, such poor performance was so unfamiliar, even unthinkable, that it quite literally took our breath away. Wow. Faced with these results, it was requiring more and more faith of the Starbucks senior leaders to believe that we could actually transform the company. He goes, I had the complete confidence of Michelle, who had worked closely with me in finalizing the transitional agenda. And I had Cliff, who shared my vision, but not all the people on the team believed in or had the discipline to execute the strategy I was putting in place. As I sat there, I recalled what another second-time CE had told me when I regained control of the company. They said, most of your top leaders will be gone or new within a year. That's tough. When you launch a brand, when you launch a company, there's a lot of people that won't get it. A lot of people won't understand it. But if the CEO, if the visionary will hold true and not just focus on the numbers, but will focus on that human connection, the emotional connection of the people that they're serving, if they're true to their competency, they will make it. Listen to what he writes. Again, it was a chaotic period. Leading Starbucks continued to be a delicate balancing act as I authorized investments to improve customer experience and boost sales while simultaneously insisting that we cut costs and closely manage expenses, especially in the areas not directly related to our core business. Wow. Listen to this. And most companies don't have to worry about this in direct selling. They're privately held. But listen to this. On the second quarter's earnings call, I felt a little bit schizophrenic. On one hand, I was promising revival. On the other, I was reporting what felt like a slow death. There's that old saying that the darkest is before the dawn, that the rain comes before the storm. All of those. Think about that for a minute. It'd be tough for any of us, but here he is, a billion-dollar business, the founder of the company. He's coming back for a second time with the main mission of fighting for the life without losing their soul. Wow. And he'd made a decision there were no sacred cows. One of the things that he had he had strived for, and we read about this early in the book, was the ability to enter entertainment, to change the world. You know, when McDonald's puts a Disney DVD out, they become the largest DVD seller of that week or that day, whatever the case may be. Starbucks was getting right up there doing the same thing. They were putting people on the map like Oprah does. The funny thing was, when he said we're going to change and overhaul the entertainment strategy, what had happened was he lost the main leaders. The president, who had done a phenomenal job of that division, left. A number of other talented people left. He says, my intent was not to abandon the role Starbucks had established in the culture, but to define it better. But yet people didn't understand. He said, we had to embrace the role in a redefined, more cost-effective manner while capitalizing on our existing relationships with AT&T, Wi-Fi, with Apple, et cetera, et cetera. But people couldn't get it. Now, everything wasn't dismal in the second quarter. But sometimes the negative can overshadow the positive if we're not careful. This is one of the reasons on our blog we changed from saying MLM scams to high-risk MLMs, because we did not want to cause turmoil. We did not want to cause problems. We did not want to elevate those out there that would tear down the industry without having full knowledge of what was happening. Well, here's what Howard did. He said the second quarter did have some bright spots. Sales in our consumer packaging good, what they sell in stores, had been up. He said since the launch of Pike Place 3 weeks earlier, brewed coffee sales also had notably increased, especially in the Northeast, the biggest market for brewed coffee. Pike's Place Roast was already our number one wholesale bean coffee. As for competitors, our internal research showed no indication that we were losing business to any one company, such as McDonald's. This was good news, yet we also had to fight public perception as well as the fast food giant's aggressive marketing budget. Our research also revealed that our declining sales were not primarily the result of self-induced problems, that's always good, but the fact that the economy was the top box why people weren't coming in. The funny thing was, the critics that were out there on Wall Street griping and complaining and saying that Starbucks was losing it, guess what? They were the same ones that went upside down and had to have bailouts. Isn't it funny, as I said earlier in the call, how people will point fingers at others so that they don't see their own flaws? It's amazing. It's funny. As I sit here and I look at this as we're about to close, here's how Howard finalizes this chapter, and I think it's good. I refuse to give in to increasing external pressures and focus on anything that would keep the company from moving forward, even if at times it felt like we were going the wrong way in a whirlwind. If you know, if you've got that gut instinct, if you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that what you're doing is right, then you stand firm with it. Crank this puppy open. Push it to the next level. And if you do, then without a shadow of a doubt, you will win. I can't tell you when, but if you're holding true to what you're supposed to be doing, you will kick the doors and you will make it happen. Live life like it's an epic adventure. I'll see you at the top. Be back here tomorrow on Radio for Your Mind as we go into Chapter 18 of Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul. Bye now.